Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 9, coming to you live from Boxing Day.
Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah!
What was that?
That's the new setup, baby. Happy Boxing Day and Merry Christmas.
I think my eyes started watering.
Aww.
You scared me. I'm fragile.
Yeah, I know. You're fragile that way. Hey, everybody. It is the Shared Desk. I am T. Morris.
And I am the slightly stunned Philippa Ballantyne.
Because we are trying something brand spanking new. We've got Soundboard. This is Soundboard from Ambrosia Software. You can find out more about them at ambrosiasw.com. They are the makers of great products like Wiretap Studio Pro, and this one right here I'm playing with it's called Soundboard, and it gives me a virtual cart, so it's kind of nice. And
so expect lots of drop-ins.
Have I got your attention now?
Yeah, exactly.
You have got my attention.
So we are actually going to take this episode to look back as well as look ahead to what we got coming up and what's going on. I mean,
2012.
Yeah,
it's like an Arthur C. Clarke book.
It is only a little more fun.
Where's my androids?
What?
I want an android.
No, you don't. You're on an iPhone. Why do you need an Android? Come on, baby.
No, I meant like a walking, talking, I'll do your laundry Android.
And, that's
where's
all.
Where's my Hal?
Stay on target. Stay on target.
All right, look.
Oh, you're going to be hell to live with that.
This landing is going to get pretty interesting. Define interesting. Oh, God, we're all going to die?
Maybe, I don't know.
Oh, I apologize, dear audience listeners. Audience listeners, or listeners from the audience.
I think that's one of the big things we can talk about here is the response that we've gotten from the Shared Desk. It's been really nice. I mean, considering this is something that we've just put on the fly, very little. This is the most, what you're listening to right now is the most prep we have ever done for this show. Sitting up a soundboard. And wow, I mean, it wasn't like that we had a plan or anything like that. We just went on ahead.
We never had a plan.
No. But there is one thing we did say when we sat down.
I've got a plan so cunning you could put a tail on it and call it a weasel.
I think that was the way we sort of approached all this. And I promise you in future episodes, the drop-ins will not be this frequent.
Yeah, he's just going to keep hitting the buttons.
I'm just exercising the new toy, trying to get the...
He's not talking about me, yeah. No.
But I do think that in 2011, the Shared Desk was one of the coolest things that we came up with. I mean, I know I'm breaking my arm, patting ourselves on the back here, but this has really been a lot of fun.
Well, people have enjoyed it a lot more than we thought they would.
Yeah.
Crazy kids.
I mean, it was J.R. Blackwell who said it sounded like it was just, you know, this is what it sounds like to hang out with T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne on a regular basis.
Well, that's pretty much the truth.
Mm. I mean, we take drinks and we talk, and I have a bell close by.
And we quote Serenity.
And there you go, and all that stuff. But
let's talk writing. Let's talk 2011 first, shall we?
Wow. What a year. I mean, you yourself had a really terrific year because Geist won its first award for its cover.
It won the Chelsea.
Chelsea. And then in May, this little book hit called Phoenix Rising, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel, which has been going gangbusters since its release. And now you can pick it up for 99 cents.
Ooh.
for pretty much every ebook reader that's out there.
Yes, that's the idea. If you find a platform in which it is not 99 cents, then please let us know and we will make it so.
That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it. And it's worked out pretty well so far.
And see, I have a feeling this soundboard's going to be a really nice addition to the show.
I think it is. Yeah.
And then, of course, Spectre came out this year, didn't it? I mean, it actually came out shortly after Ministry, didn't it?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah.
Oh, what a tough life we lead.
It's been a hard year. Yeah. Well, I only had two books come out this year, calendar year anyway. Spectre has been doing good. Geist's been doing good. Got another two books in the series. Got Danielle interested in perhaps extending the series beyond that.
And for myself, I feel like I feel, and that little bleep was not, as a matter of fact, that was not the soundboard. That was, in fact, Facebook. Somebody bleeped me on Facebook. But we're forging ahead. So for
it's
me,
like off the cuff right now.
Yeah. For me, I think the thing that I overcame was my fear of short stories. I'm actually writing truly short stories. I mean, if you remember. If you remember when I did my first short story with you, or
Erotica
a la carte, even for J.C. Hutchins.
Oh, yeah.
I was clocking in somewhere between 6,000 to 8,000 words, which...
That's dancing on the edge of a novelette or novella or something like that, yeah.
And now, just with the recent, In the Spirit of Christmas, which was our Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences Christmas special.
Which was yours.
And found at ministryofpeculiarocurrences.com. I want to say that story was just under 1,500 words.
It's like flash fiction for you.
Yeah, I know. And I wrote my first flash fiction, actually, for J.R. Blackwell.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Shelter in Place.
Yeah, we did quite a bit of little short fiction here and there.
I was really proud of Shelter in Place. I was really, really proud of that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd never done zombie fiction. I've always wanted to try zombie fiction. I didn't know what I could bring to it. And... I mean, all the zombie fiction that I'm doing, I'm comparing
yours,
to...
Your short fiction, I think, always kind of stuns people because it's usually different to how they
and
kind
it's
of
short?
Expect... Well, the fact that it's short, but it's also... I don't know, you write very emotional short stories sometimes that are kind of hard-tugging.
I was actually going
to say... One would almost suspect that you read Keats and Byron and...
And walk around with an ascot that's got bloodstains from my...
I think you usually give me a hard time about that, but I think we can all concede that perhaps you have a little...
I sit down...
A little goth in your
I do. I sit down and I say...
This is the worst moment of my entire life.
And then I write a short story. That's how it goes. But the last short story, now you got to admit, the last short story was fun.
That was fun, but it was also a little touching at the end.
I did. Yeah. And, before that there was, something else that I wrote that was very short and, I was really proud of it. And of course this is going to say, well, is there anything you haven't been proud of? Well, some of the stuff I've written nonfiction wise, I'm not too proud of, but I will say,
it's been a good year for writing.
It's been a good year for, you know, if I can bring my day job into this, I just had a 3-part series on parenting for the digital native. And we got some serious, some serious traffic on that. As a matter of fact, PC Magazine, their online security magazine, they picked up the article.
Woo-hoo.
And we got some traffic. So I was really pleased about that. I mean, granted, that was because it was my day job and I can't speak for the voice of the company, I had to ghostwrite it.
The ghostwriter with Ewan McGregor, Pierce Brosnan.
I don't think that ended well for him. So
no, it didn't. No, I don't think it did.
Keep away from the comparison.
I never saw that. Did you see that?
No.
Okay, well, there you go.
I'm not drawn to movies about writers.
Oh. Go fig. So I felt like I got over my fear because I remember one time I was describing short stories as being the golden unicorn for me. I could never write a short story.
I think you've got over that.
Now, you, on the other hand, with your last Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences story.
That one kind of stuck in my
I think that's my fault.
Teeth.
That's my fault.
I don't know. I think because it was getting towards the end of the year and I had a lot of other distractions, it kind of... I don't know. I could see the beginning, but I couldn't see the end. And that's the problem. If I can't see the end, then it's tricky. But I don't know what it was. I suddenly, after I talked to you about it, and it fell into place nicely.
Yeah.
And it's about 5,000 words, and that will drop next Steam Tuesday, the last... No, sorry.
Basically
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
This week.
Yeah. So
the last Tuesday of the year.
So the idea is that we're going to do our shared desk. We're gonna use the soundboard. We're going to try to get it all as much in one take as possible. Even though this show drops on a Wednesday, I just wanna see if I can't streamline it, work in something new. And now the one thing I don't have on here is sound effects for when anybody drops the F bomb or the S bomb.
Well, we'll
like
just
that.
Try and avoid that.
We will try to avoid that. And so what else about 2011? I mean,
Well, we did a lot of conventions.
We did. We did.
We got to some new places, met some new folks.
That was fun.
We got to Dallas-Fort Worth. I've never been to Texas before. Yeehaw.
I want to say that FenCon was a standout con.
It was a good con.
It was a standout con for the year.
Mind you, also, we went to WorldCon in Reno, and that was a good convention.
Not a bad convention.
Didn't care for Reno very much, but...
That's why I'm thinking FenCon was more... I think I, of all the different things that we did, because we went to at least, I want to say right now, off the top of my head, we went to four new cons.
Uh-huh.
We went to Steampunk World's Fair, uh-huh. which we need to follow up with them for 2012. There's FenCon, there's WorldCon, which is, if you think about it, it's always a new
convention. It's always a new convention, yeah.
And then there was New York Comic Con.
Oh, yes, that little thing.
And out of those four... I would say FenCon was the best overall experience.
Yeah.
I mean, New York Comic Con was just a trip.
That was an assault on the senses.
That really was.
So
but it was,
that kind of stands by itself. That, yeah. Its cheese stands alone.
Yeah. I would rank New York Comic Con and Dragon Con kind of in the same tier. Yeah. When you get to that big of an event.
However, I mean, it was the biggest thing we've done as writers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which is why it was such a big step.
Yeah.
And then there was but FenCon had a really nice vibe to it.
It was a very nice convention. I really hope we can get back to it next year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to as well. It was great seeing Odin One Eye. Terrific connecting with Beth Case and you know having
meeting
sit down
new
with,
friends.
Yeah,
someone trying to pay $250 for a hardcover book.
I mean, that was crazy stuff. But it was an overall a really really fun convention. And as far as Steampunk World's Fair, I think this year is going to go a little differently compared
yeah,
to last
yeah.
year.
I think there's a new person on it, but you know, we'll get to that when we do 2012.
Right, and
so it was just a really busy year.
It did. It felt busy. It felt busy.
It felt like we were. It was an enjoyable year, but one of those ones where you're like, whew, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So
take a breath.
This is where we're taking the breath.
Yeah, exactly.
Pulling ourselves together.
And right now it's just a matter of. It's just a matter of getting things together and looking ahead to 2012.
Yeah.
And
so let's talk 2012.
Let's talk 2012. What do we got? Well, already we are starting pre-production on our book trailer.
Yeah.
Which seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger the more we plan for it.
Well, we have been incredibly lucky. I mean, we were lucky in the first one that we were able to... We were sort of organized, but not terribly. And we were lucky in that we had some really good friends, Link and Jet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who were pretty much the rest of the crew.
Well, we kept it simple. That's the thing. We kept it simple. And even something, I mean, and I'm glad we kept it simple. Now, granted, this is a look back to 2011 as well as a look forward to 2012. That was the first time that I really was a filmmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing when you're shooting your own videos, and I know that's all about the whole podcast community and video
DIY stuff.
Yeah, DIY, and you know, you're the cinematographer, you're the talent, you're the director. but this was the first time I was a filmmaker because, and I found out the difference. I mean, you've got somebody that's skilled in lights. You've got somebody now. Granted, with Link, he was skilled with lights and he was skilled in photography. So you have someone else taking that, and then you've got a location scout. That was what Patrick was.
Yeah.
Patrick was our location scout. He took us all around Stanton and said, "What do you think?" We were just like, "Oh my God, this is perfect!" And we even talked to our sister-in-law,
yeah,
who's from Stanton, and she was like, "Where did you shoot that stuff?"
Yeah, it looked really nice.
Yeah, turned out great.
The product was nice. It's been viewed 5,000 times, which is really good
for a book trailer. Yeah. I mean, Leviathan only had I think Leviathan had maybe 1,000 or 2,000.
Yeah,
you know,
so pretty good.
Not too shabby.
So we're planning bigger and better.
And but again, the lessons that we learn,
yeah,
and bringing it in here. We now have it's like people are they've got an expectation level. It's like, okay, you brought us this first one, how are you going to top it? You know, and so we have to top it.
We're going to have more actors and actresses.
Yeah, we've got two actors already, on the books.
Yeah,
actually three. I'm sorry, three. We have
Sofia Del Morte.
Sofia Del Morte taken. We've got we actually have a stand-in for Ahita Pujari. She's not Indian.
Yeah.
But we think that we can kind of massage it a little bit and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
We also have a Dr. Sound on board.
Yeah.
And the idea that we have...
We could have a Sussex as well.
Who are we thinking about for Sussex? I'm trying to remember. Are we talking about John?
Yeah, we could.
With the handlebar mustache?
Yeah, we were thinking of a few people.
I was actually thinking about him for Douglas. Seriously, I was thinking about him for Douglas.
Let's not do this on mic.
Why not?
But anyway, we
Hey, have... B, come on.
It's all part of the plan.
No, it's not. It's the fact that you don't want to edit anything out. Well, but lead us to say we have a bunch of people around us. We are lucky enough to have a bunch of people around us who are willing to give their time and their talents and their steampunk costumes.
And in some cases, their steampunk props and their homes.
Oh, yes. We don't want to
talk about it. We're not going to talk about that until it happens. We're not going to talk about it until everything drops.
We like to have this St. Foo thing until, you know, no one wants to look like they've got egg on their face.
Especially
if something falls through. So when we have it in the can, we will be proclaiming who amongst in the steampunk community, who is very well known, will be helping us out.
The other thing, too, is that the overall plan of this is that we're going to shoot several scenes from the book. And then after we shoot scenes from the book, we'll put them together in a trailer. Now, the thing about trailers, and we've talked about this before, maybe we could dedicate an entire show to it, but I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of leftover footage.
Yeah.
And the idea that I had is, okay, you know what? We make the trailer, and heck, if we can make two trailers. But if we have all this footage lying around, wouldn't it be cool if we just did like little scenes from the book, and then we released them?
Yeah, that can be tiny.
Yeah, tiny little 2-minute scenes right before the book comes out, and then even after the book comes out. This is all pie in the sky, but this is what we're talking about, what we're looking at.
We'll see what we can manage. Trailer, right? Yeah.
So that covers that. That's the opening of 2012, and then of course we've got
Tales from the Archives, Volume 2.
Volume 2. Did we agree it's going to launch in March?
I think
2-month lead in, and then in May, boom.
Well, yeah, March.
I mean, the book comes out end of May, so we might as well look at either March or if we do it in March, it's a 3-month lead in, 2 months.
I think we've discussed the fact that I think people have short memories. You know, you don't want to go too far in advance because then they go, hey, that's really awesome in March, and then they forget it by the time the book comes out in May. So we'll see.
By the way, this is the Shared Desk episode 9. I'm T. Morris.
We're not just spitballing.
No, it's true. So then that's going to launch in April.
Yeah.
So that's going to launch in April. But in March, we don't have anything coming up in March, do we? Well, we're actually going to be filming in March. Yeah. Probably end of February, beginning of March. And
it's the Steampunk World's Fair that'll be when the book comes out.
Right. If everything works out.
That's in Piscataway this
Piscataway.
Year. Next year, sorry.
We're,
well,
yeah.
Next, this, you know, 2012.
There is the con decision process.
No. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Oh, oh,
no,
yeah.
No.
Oh, oh,
no.
Yeah, yeah,
no.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, John, no.
I'll drive.
Okay.
I mean, we can go through that, you know.
It's kind of sounding sexy. It's just my addled brain. But yeah, the conventions that we really only have as a lock are Dragon Con.
Yeah. Dragon Con, we're definitely going to be at Dragon Con.
And we're definitely going to be at World Steampunk World's Fair.
We hope. We haven't gotten any kind of confirmation on any of the cons.
I think we should probably be okay.
Well, I'd rather not make that assumption.
Yeah,
again,
but,
it's the whole.
It's not a lock, but we have bought accommodations for Dragon Con, so that's definite.
Yeah, no. Dragon Con's a lock, but Dragon Con is a lock for a different reason, and that's when I'm going to turn the mic over to you, because you have more than just one book coming out at the end of May.
Well, theoretically, I suppose I've got 4 books coming out next year because we've got The Janus Affair in May.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got, what's next? Oh, Hunter and Fox comes out in late June. And then Wraith will be coming out in September. And, of course, we have the German version of Phoenix Rising coming out in June.
And I got your attention now!
I think you do. I mean, it's just...
With its pretty, pretty cover.
Yeah. It's a different kind of cover, isn't it?
I like it.
Now, I'm trying to remember. If the German version is coming out, does that mean the Russian one is coming out as well?
I don't know. We'll have to find out about the Russians.
Yeah.
You know, they are secretive.
Yeah. The Russians, they are both secret. and we got the Janus. We're still sitting on approval time.
For the cover.
We're anxious to see that cover.
If you're wondering,
we're anxious to show you guys that cover. Yeah.
Well, what happens when, you know, HarperCollins, they have to show the cover to the buyers.
Right.
If the buyers don't like it, then they might change it.
I can't imagine them not.
I don't think they will, but you know.
I love that cover.
It is a gorgeous cover.
I love that cover.
It is an adventurous romp kind
yes.
of feel
yes,
it to
is. It. Yes, it is.
And Wellington and Eliza are on the cover together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we can tell them about right now.
Right now. Right now.
And of course, I've got, apparently, they teased me at Ace. They said, oh, we just saw the initial sketches
yeah.
here for Wraith.
Done by the award-winning Jason Chan.
They didn't share it with me, but that's okay. I had some input on the
oh, you
colors
got it.
And the you know what I wanted to see on the cover. I just want to see if Merrick makes it.
Yeah. Speaking of Jason, you got to rant just a little bit about
the guy that stole the cover.
Yeah, you got to.
Well, it's nice to have fans because some kind soul pointed out to me that some random writer in Tibet had just. Taken the picture of guys. His book was about a woman dealing with some sort of drug addiction. It had nothing to do with women and lions. And it was bizarre. So, yeah, I contacted him. I told Ace. I went on Twitter and told everybody about it. This guy ended up being on Twitter as well. And he, obviously English is not his first language.
No.
And he's young and foolish. But he was like, I didn't know. I just find it on Google and use it. I was like, oh my goodness. But to be fair, he did change it within a day.
Yeah.
Mainly because I got Amazon to kick his book off Amazon because of it. So he probably was kind of forced to.
Right.
But
this is why you do not mess with
it. It was interesting. I also told Jason because he owns the image rights
yeah.
and the cover rights
right.
belong to Ace. But I said, he didn't like freak out. He was like, I hate it when that happens. So I presume that's not the first time that his book is,
yeah.
his covers have turned up on random people's books. But you know, in this day and age, you really can't get away with that sort of stuff.
So we've got Harbinger. It's Harbinger that's coming.
No, it's Wraith.
Wraith. Yeah,
Harbinger's
yeah. I'm sorry.
Year.
Guy Spectre Wraith. Right. Guy Spectre Wraith. And we're still going to be doing. We're still going to be releasing the e-books of Tales from the Archives. We're still going to be doing. Mm-hmm. We will not release the Christmas special though, because that is a special just for the people that are subscribed to the podcast.
Mm. Well, I mean, although I was thinking of sticking it in the only in the anthology, the final anthology.
Oh, in the final anthology. Well, see, that's something else we're planning for 2012. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Do you still have one more book to talk about? You know, we've talked about Wraith. We've talked about Janice. Let's talk about this delightful little book you've got coming out with Hugo winning editor. Lou Anders. I'm talking, of course, about
Hunter and Fox.
Which you have released the
cover.
The cover
has been finally released.
God, that's a sexy cover.
Yeah, yeah.
You got
and
good
got
cover
a,
food,
it's
baby.
Got a. I don't know what it is about me and animals, but I like the demonic horse, the demonic shaggy horse on the front of Hunter and Fox is nice. It's the first book that I wrote that Laurie. It's the book I wrote that Laurie actually picked me up for.
So
she,
how old
she
is
liked
the book?
This book. Oh, I wrote this 2006 or something. So it's been around a while. And I think I've talked about this before, the fact that when Laurie got it and started shopping it around, that the fantasy genre was in the down,
yeah.
low,
yeah.
in the toilet pretty much, and urban fantasy was in the ascendant. And now high fantasy is coming back and people are starting to do big epic sweeping things.
Thank you, Peter Jackson and the crew of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, So that's why that got picked up. And it's a story. The character, you think Saoirse is kind of...
Jaded
and prickly. Oh, yeah. The main character in Hunter and Fox is almost an anti-hero.
Oh,
almost.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
And she's basically working for the enemy, and she gets... pulled back out of this sort of deep, dark hole by a man. So it's an interesting reversal because usually it's the man is rescued by the woman who's, you know, he's emotionally scarred, you know, like Beauty and the Beast. He's emotionally scarred and her kindness brings him back. Well, this is the opposite thing.
It's
I like to
nice.
Do opposites. And it also has a large, shaggy, demonic horse in
Well, there
it.
You go. There you go. And, but some of the other things we've also got we're going to probably have that storyboarded out along with the trailer is we want to do, can we talk about the ministry app or should I keep my, should
well,
I say
well,
a few about
I think
that?
We should say that there are a couple of things that we're chewing on.
There's
moment.
Idea. And one of the ideas is a ministry app.
A ministry app.
Yeah.
The other is a ministry graphic novel.
Oh, yeah.
Graphic, what would you call it? Comic book.
It would
digital
actually be
comic?
It would be a digital one sheet. Yeah. That's the best way to describe it.
We made a nice contact within the digital comic world.
Well, we made it through New York Comic Con.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah. On the train
home, right?
You know, we picked up a card.
And what we're trying to do is we're trying to find out.
We're just working around it at the moment. We need to find out what they need from us. And then we need to find an artist to do it, and we've got a few names that we can get in touch with find out.
Yeah.
So it may or may not end up as a Kickstarter. It may be something that we do ourselves, but you know, it's nebulous at this stage.
But you see, this is the thing that I think this is what we should probably be making a point about is that, I mean, the point of when you're ahead in 2012. You got to have some sort of plan, you know? I mean, you heard me play the bumper earlier.
It's all part of the plan.
But it's true. You need to have what?
Yeah. Just you and the bumper. That's funny. Okay.
Wrong answer.
I'm sitting on that one. I'm sitting on that one for when you tick me off. Just so you know. All right, hang on.
You secure that shit, Hudson.
Okay, so what was I talking about? I was talking about making plans. I'm talking about making plans. We, as writers, you should have plans.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the other plans that I haven't had a chance to talk about is the completion of Dawn's Early Light, along with a completion of the reboot of Moravi, which people got a taste on with Darkest Before the Dark Water, and it got a great response. Yeah. And that's...
So basically you want to write 1.5 books this year.
I would like to write 1.5 books. I'd love to write 2.5 books, but the problem with
I think realism is also...
Realism is important because I still have a full-time job. Yeah. So 1.5 books is the goal. And I'd like to get back into the swing of Darkest Before the Dark Water, what is now being called Dark Water. That's just the working title for it. We'll figure all the details out later.
Be careful, sometimes working titles just become the titles.
That's true. Achtung Baby. We also have Dawn's Early Light, which we're working on. We've got two chapters in the can, and we're hopefully going to crank out a third before the end of the year. But these are the goals that you need to set for yourself. I know there are a lot of writers that they tend to write by the seat of their pants, but and there are other writers that they have to have everything outlined meticulously. But I also think that they should be, both kinds of writers should be going into the new year with some sort of plan, some sort of skeletal idea of where they want to go.
Where you want to be this time next year. I think that's always a good, you know, what do you want to get to the end of 2012 and have done?
Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily, and not necessarily do we want to think about, oh, well, you know, not uber lofty goals. Like, I want to win a Hugo in 2012. It's like,
that would be nice. But
I mean, that's a bonus.
You can't really plan for that sort of stuff.
No, you can't. I mean, as we have found out, I mean, we wanted, I remember what we wanted when Phoenix Rising came out. We wanted the book to be well received. That's all we wanted. But we didn't see Goodreads coming. We didn't see the Airship Award coming.
No, I mean, that's nice. You know, you don't want to be able to see everything.
Right. And I think when you're putting together your goals, don't necessarily go in that route. Go more into what we've got with the strip of chalkboard that we have.
We've got our chalkboard over there. We've got Harbinger, I need to have done by August, and Born and Made by November. And Dawn's Early Light by May.
So I got to write up there Dark Water and
yeah,
have some
you've
got to
give that a time.
Yeah, I got to give that some sort of time. But having those goals and, you know, moving forward, I think that's essential in a writer's professional career.
Yeah.
You know, is not necessarily thinking, well, what am I going to do next? But a list of here's what I'm going to do next. Here's the next step for me.
Yeah, writing it all down is important.
Mm-hmm. Seriously?
Seriously.
So for this segment of Seriously, Seriously, I'm going to turn it over to Pip because, wow, did we go on a tear about this last night.
Yeah, we were talking about this for quite a while. So the story comes from The Guardian in the UK, and there's the Spanish novelist called, oh gosh, I'm gonna mangle her name, Lucía Estibarera, and the title is She Quits Writing in Piracy Protest. Apparently in Spain, piracy is rampant. And she was she's a writer. Well, maybe I should say she was a writer.
Was a writer.
She was pretty doing well. She had some best-selling novels in Spain. And but her latest novel didn't do well. It didn't end up in the bestseller charts. And apparently she now claims that illegal downloading of ebooks is forcing her to give up writing and start looking for a new job. I don't know. Maybe she's going to be flipping burgers at McDonald's or something. But
remain calm. All is well.
Now, Lucia has basically said that she looked on the internet and she discovered that there were more illegal downloads of her book than she had sold.
What was that? Did you see that? Was that the primary buffer panel?
So she basically said that Spain is having more per capita is the most got the most pirate sites, apparently.
But why is the rum gone?
Thank you, Tim.
You can just give me that look. Just give me the throat slash if you're saying okay. Ixnay on the Oppens.
I'll just poke you in the eye. So the book was The Contents of Silence, and
sounds good. Sounds like a Bond novel.
Now the interesting thing about this was her publisher was worried about piracy, so they didn't put out an ebook. And then what happened? People created a PDF and downloaded it anyway.
I know you mean to be friendly, but I hope you won't take it amiss if I ask you to sod off and die.
I mean, that's the part that boggles my mind. I mean, you're actually saying we're afraid of piracy, so we're not going to release it as an ebook.
Surprise! They pirated it.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Is like if you're creating a need, and that this person is a bestseller. Oh, and there's this other little thing called the ebook revolution. Now, granted, it isn't happening worldwide. It is not happening worldwide, but piracy usually happens. At least modern book piracy happens on a digital platform.
Yeah.
Even if they offered the book for 99 cents, that's still 99 more cents that they're making off of the ebook version than if they than if it's being pirated.
I think dear Lucia, I think she's made one of the problems that authors have is that they look at, I don't know, say your book's been downloaded 20,000 times, right? They look at it and they say, well, look, that's at least $20,000 out of my back pocket.
Wrong answer.
I would agree. I feel that for you to think that every one of those illegal downloads, I mean, even when we crack down on downloads of Ministry and Geist and so forth, to think that those downloads are lost sales, I have a tough time buying that, because the people that are illegally downloading this stuff anyway are people that either A, can't get it, which I will give credit to both the ebook revolution and to Amazon. You can get this book pretty much anywhere. Even though it's not being carried in the UK, you can still download it from Amazon. And you can still download it from Barnes & Noble. You can still download it for Kobo.
Yeah, Kobo is the way that my dad gets away regionality in New Zealand for my books. The fact that she thinks that every download is a loss to her. I mean,
the people that are illegally downloading something aren't going to pay for it anyway.
No,
they wouldn't like to.
And there might be a certain percentage, maybe it might be a small percentage,
right,
of people who download it who do like your stuff and who are interested in it and are introduced to it in a way that they wouldn't have been. And they might take it. I mean, nobody likes to have their work pirated. I mean, I do tell Ace when there are sites that are torrenting them.
And when we get a hit about Phoenix Rising, and where it's being torrented, you know. Now, and that's something that may be a topic for another show. I don't know. Maybe concerning people want to know how do we deal with reviews. Maybe we should also talk about how we deal with piracy. But the one thing that we don't do is we don't step in and say, don't do this. We immediately take the link, send it off to our publishers.
And if they do something about it, they do something
about it. Because it's their, that's part of the job. You know, our job as writers is to write and to promote. But part of their job as the publishers are to make sure that people aren't doing this. And I don't think that a little piracy is bad, because it's still helping to get your word out. But at the same time, to expect that all those downloads are lost sales, I have a tough time swallowing that too.
Well, I mean, illegally downloaded books are they're often badly formatted. They're tough to read.
Exactly.
So by her publisher not offering an e-book, then there's no option for people but who want to get it in an e-format.
But what we are saying seriously to, like seriously, is her reaction to this.
Yeah, just saying, I'm out. I'm getting out of the pool.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you know, just gotta play this again.
Wrong answer.
I mean, really? I mean, you're gonna quit writing because you made a bad decision, your publisher made a bad decision, and because, you're a bestseller in Spain.
Yeah.
That's gotta be worth something.
And I think what's also kind of pompous is to say, well, I wasn't a bestseller, so it must have been the piracy that did it.
Yes. It's not because your work sucks.
I mean, even Stephen King, surely not every one of his books was a bestseller, was it?
No. I don't think so.
Everyone has a fizzer now and then. So,
exactly.
She can't exactly say that. She can be absolutely positive that's why her book wasn't on the bestseller list, because her other books were on the bestseller list.
I mean, that's another seriously thing, I mean, too, about her, is that it's the blame game, you know? I don't want to go, maybe what I was writing about didn't appeal. I mean, of course, you put your heart and soul in everything you do, but if an idea doesn't work, you know, you don't say, well, I quit. I mean, that's like, well, you know, we were on this with Sonic Boom. You know, once upon a time when Sonic Boom would lose a game, she would go, I don't want to play anymore. It's why? Because you're losing? Yes. Well, you know what?
I think that's what Lucy is doing.
Yeah.
She's like, I think it's an easy out for her to say, well, it's all piracy.
Yeah, it is an easy out.
You can never be sure of that.
Right. I mean, to quit, I mean, obviously you become a writer, you become an actor, you do anything in art, because you love it. Not because you're going to get rich right away, but because you love it.
Yeah.
And to say, well, you know, I'm going to quit because of this one title and it's pirates, is probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard from an author's mouth. I mean, now if she was on her fourth or fifth book and she were to say, you know what, I'm quitting because people aren't buying my books, maybe you got something there. But I mean, that's the other thing, too, I'm looking forward to in 2012, is that it's going to be my 10th year as a professional writer.
Mm.
Not full-time professional, but I will have been doing this for 10 years.
And getting money for it.
And getting money for it, which makes me a professional. And I have to, I mean, I'm looking at this now and thinking, well, shoot, is this where I expected to be? Where do I go from here?
Mm.
And it's, you know, but yeah, I don't think I've ever... I've never thought about quitting. The only time I would ever think about quitting is if people just stopped buying or stopped listening or stopped enjoying what I did. And that hasn't happened. So it almost sounds like she's playing this blame game because she wanted to get out of writing. She wanted to get out of it.
Well, she's certainly getting attention for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it goes back to, you know...
Maybe it's like the Rolling Stones, you know, where they're like, this is our final tour.
One more time.
We're back again. I don't know, but I think it's...
Look at me, I'm quitting.
Big cracking deal.
You know, I'm leaving. Did you see me leave through the door? Yeah, I'm leaving now. That's why I sent out this press release, to tell you all that I'm leaving.
Yeah, I mean, I think she needs to toughen up.
This is the worst moment of my entire life.
Oh, actually, there was one more segment I wanted to do. And, you know, I'm not even... I mean, we're going to try this new live format. So I wanted to do one more thing.
Writers off the clock.
So what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
No idea.
So... last night we went to go see Sherlock Holmes: A Game of Shadows.
Yeah.
So let's just do a quick off the cuff movie review.
I mean, all right.
I mean,
I liked it.
I dug it, and that'll do it. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so, yeah, well, Game of Shadows. Okay, first off, let's go on.
Spoilers.
There will be spoilers ahead, so if you have not seen Game of Shadows yet, you may want to fast forward to where we say in the show notes when we wrap it up. But this is a movie that stars Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law. Basically, everybody came back.
Yes.
But we have new cast members. We have Stephen Fry, who plays. We have a naked Stephen Fry at one point, who plays Mycroft.
Yeah.
And then we have, I cannot get her name right, but she is the Swedish actress from the original
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. Yeah.
And you talk about a great agent this chick's got. Not only is she in this movie, but she's going to be in this very hyped up film called Prometheus, which... Regardless of what Ridley Scott is saying, that's a prequel to Alien.
Yeah.
It's a prequel to Alien.
It looks good, fantastic,
and she's the lead in it. Premises of this, well, and that's something I've noticed about what they're doing with what Guy Ritchie and the screenwriters are doing for the new Sherlock Holmes films. Not only are they ramping up the action a bit, which is a complaint that a lot of people have about this movie, but I think it's they spend just as much time, in my opinion, on the cerebral point of the movie as they do the action. Mm-hmm. It does feel like a Guy Ritchie film, of course, but what I'm seeing them do is that they take a whole bunch of different elements from a whole bunch of different Sherlock Holmes novels, and then they create their own storyline.
Yeah, I love the bit where they had Jude found a note from Sherlock, and it said, "Come at your earliest convenience, if inconvenient,
come anyway."
I can't remember which story that was from, but mm-hmm. That was definitely a classic Sherlock Holmes-ism.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just the chemistry is still there.
Yes,
chemistry is still there. I mean,
oh, there's a hot bromance there.
Lie next to me. Why? Ooh. I insist. You are lying next to me. I am smoking a pipe.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, yeah. The homoeroticism. The homoeroticism and bromance.
At one stage, they're even dancing together.
Yeah. And who taught you to dance? You did. Oh, well. No, it's a. And, you know, there's even a little bit of a bromance between him and Moriarty, in my opinion. Between Holmes and Moriarty.
Yes. They're like the spurned lover.
They are. And.
Because he sort of offers Sherlock, you know, to sort of, you know.
I mean, there's
look the other way.
I personally think this is a better script than the first one. I really believe it's a better script than the first one. I mean, the first one was terrific.
Yeah.
But this one, this particular script had a few more twists and turns, and it was a little more cerebral at points. I mean, the way that Holmes was piecing together everything to figure out what the code was for Moriarty and what he was doing. It was really ingenious. Mm. I don't know if you noticed it or not, but there was also a parallel between the map that Holmes had in his web of intrigue. And then when you see Moriarty's hideout,
yeah,
it's the same web. It's the exact same web. And, you know, I really enjoyed that aspect of it. I really liked the back and forth between Moriarty.
The guy who played Moriarty was very good.
Very good. I've seen him before in other stuff, and he usually plays the sniveling, sidekick in the background. I've seen him in other stuff. I can't remember what, but I have seen him in other stuff. But that guy really comes into his own in this one. Also, I think it's fair to say a little more steampunk.
Yes,
in this one,
definitely more steampunk. There was a bomb that had a cogs related sort of
triggers and stuff.
There was a steampunk car.
Yeah.
Steam powered car. Whipping along at least 10 miles an hour.
At least. The funny thing, and I was kind of breathing a sigh of relief on this.
Mm.
The funny thing was that there was an opera scene.
Yes.
At one point.
Oh, when they said the opera, I was like, oh, okay.
Thank God our book came out earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, because there would have been people saying, oh, you totally stole
it. Totally ripped it off. And then the other thing, too, that's also a relief is not to give away any spoilers, but we have a train sequence involving somebody scaling the outside of the train. No, they scaled the outside of the train from the side.
Yeah.
We have it from the top.
Yeah.
And it was just the parallels. I'm like, I should be strangely flattered by all this.
Somebody said, do you think they stole it? And I was like,
oh, please. Yeah, come on.
Please, we wish.
Yeah. But just some really wonderful performances from people. I highly recommend this one. I do. I think it was better than the first one.
Yes, if you're going to be a Sherlock Holmes purist, you're going to freak out, so don't probably don't go.
But if you want to have a good time.
But if you want to have a fun, adventurous romp with some nice barbs and quips and Robert Downey Jr. being fun. And
romance left and right.
And Jude Law was good. You were in danger of liking Jude Law.
I have to admit, between Hugo and Sky Captain and World of Tomorrow and the stuff I've seen him do in the Sherlock Holmes films, I'm really starting to like Jude Law as an actor. And I never thought I'd say those words, but you know, there they are. And now... Now we're going to wrap up the episode. We're going to go on ahead and just wrap it all up. I think though, before I feel like trying to, you know, play with the timer, because there's no countdown. Well, there is a pseudo countdown on this array. I think I'm going to manually throw in the closing theme. When I get a little more confident with the soundboard and a little more confident with the bumpers and everything, then I'll go on ahead and I'll do that. But
okay. Well, wow, a little bit of production.
A little bit of production.
You poor soul.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the... I guess this is the end of our year in 2011. Yeah. Was there anything you wanted to say profound to our listenership?
I just want to say thank you to all the listeners and readers and supporters. We've just had a really good year.
We have a lot of crossover with the people listening to this show. We have a lot of crossover from our other projects, from the ministry, from Moravi, from Billy,
from
Erotica a la carte. Really the big thing that we have coming up is the long anticipated final episode.
Well, the story is written. It just needs to be produced.
So it was funny though. I got to share this though. We were here in the car and I said, yeah, I posted the Christmas special. Do you want to know when the last time we posted anything on the feed for the ministry? It was back in September. And Pip was like, what? I take that back. We probably syndicated some shows and we actually lost track of some of the interviews that we wanted to syndicate. Like there was the interview that we did at New York Comic Con with Geek Watch. I believe it was Geek Watch.
Yeah, we might never send it in between.
Yeah, we will. But we finally found out that yes, it has been since the end of September that we dropped.
That's my fault.
My bad.
I own that one.
And I got your attention now.
I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of that one, I think. And trust me, there are more that I haven't played, and there are more to come. And if you have any bumpers that you would like to send me, any little great little high quality sound gems from clips of films or television that you want to send me, please feel free to email me at t@tmorris.com, or hey, send them Pip's way
at pjvalentine.com. Don't bother sending me bumpers. Send them to him.
You can also reach us on the voicemail line at 703-791-1701.
And please do send us.
Because
next episode is going to be a feedback show, so we want to hear any questions, comments, queries, feedback.
It's all part of the plan.
That's our first episode for 2012, which is going to be, yes, a full-blown listener appreciation show. We're going to take your calls. We're going to take your questions. We have a lot of questions that have been tweeted to us, but it's always nice when we get the voicemail comments because it feels a little more
like
solid.
You're here.
Yeah, like you're here. And it's like it's a dial-in show, so that's kind of cool. We can also be reached at tmorris.com,
pjvalentine.com,
ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com,
eroticaalacarte.com.
For all your naughty needs.
Yes.
And what about now? That was the other thing I wanted to find out for 2012. Books of the Order. What's the story with Books of the Order and that Books of the Order, Chronicles of the Order podcast? What's the story?
I'm
going
to have to see how that fits in.
Okay.
It's a tight schedule in the middle of the year.
Yeah, isn't it though?
So we shall see.
So so that's all that we've got. And I guess it's a good time to say now that the Shared Desk is a 3.0 Creative Commons licensed United States. No derivatives, no fudge.
Share alike, no non-commercial, no derivatives. 3.0.
When did you get
American
so good
license.
At this? When did you get so good at this?
I don't know. It's just embedded in my DNA now.
And I'm the guy that wrote Podcasting for Dummies. Wow. So with the and also in the feedback show, if you want to chime in on what you think about the new toy and how we're doing things, you can also
I'm gonna get some
feedback. I know I'm gonna get some feedback.
It's not my fault.
And on that note, thanks for listening. As always, enjoy the ride.
And have a great 2012.
you got here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?